Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Cover 2, a podcast on the Cleveland Browns.
Hit! Browns are going to win!
Mayfield and Sean Landry, touchdown!
With Dan Kadar and Browns beat writer Nate Ulrich of the Akron Beacon Journal and Ohio.com. With Steve Dorshuk from the Canton Repository.
Intercepted! Picked off by Denzel Ward!
Chubb will take this all the way! 92 yards!
Browns fans, now Cover 2, a podcast on the Cleveland Browns.
Hi, this is George Thomas from the Akron Beacon Journal. I'm with Nate Ulrich from the Akron Beacon Journal, Steve Dorshuk from the Canton Repository, Marla Ridenhour from the Akron Beacon Journal. In the too close for comfort edition of the Cleveland Browns versus the Baltimore Ravens, there's a little subtext to that we won't get into, but how was the rest of the game, guys? The Browns go in with a dominating lead at halftime and nearly choke it all up to a backup quarterback once again. What thoughts do you have about that, first of all? Hundley getting his opportunity and making the most of it. And you know what's positively scary is that dude looks like Lamar Jr. Period. And he dinged the Browns on more than a few occasions with those skills.
He did, George, and he found Greedy Williams filling in for Greg Newsome II, who suffered a concussion on the final play of Friday's practice and was inactive. And he exploited that matchup with Greedy and Rashad Bateman for two deep balls to put the Browns in some real bad situations. The defense, however, did come through and finished after the onside kick was recovered by the Ravens. I got to tell you guys, my instant reaction when the Ravens recovered that onside kick after it bounced off Andy Janovich was that the Ravens were going to win. They have Justin Tucker. I mean, the guy is an automatic field goal weapon the vast majority of the time. Mike Prefer, we know the Browns special teams coordinator, has called him a first ballot Hall of Fame type guy. And I just think that, when the Ravens get that situation, recover an onside kick, they're going to get – a little bit of yardage, and Justin Tucker is going to break the hearts of the Browns. But to the defense's credit, Myles Garrett, Jadeveon Clowney, Denzel Ward, the biggest name, stepped up, and they got the stop.
I think it was kind of key that it would have been fascinating to see Tucker have to try a really long field goal at the end. I mean, it wouldn't have been so fascinating. It would have been extremely depressing if he had made it. But unlike the earlier field goals that he made in the game, I think they were on the close side of the field. And then, of course, when McLaughlin missed his field goal, flashes of, boy, I still miss Phil Dawson all these years later, go through your mind. And then Phil's comments about how difficult it is to kick in this stadium, particularly into the dog pound end, come to mind. But that field goal, whatever it would have been, and if they were down to the last few seconds and it had been a 75-yarder, I have no doubt that they would have at least tried. Saving grace for the Browns at that point might have been that been a wind-blown miss. And what would have been thrilling to see Tucker miss a field goal, which he never does.
120 left to play. Huntley throws the end zone. Touchdown!
Damn, ESPN!
Narrow the margin.
Wow. Sorry, guys. Auto play.
Was that
we're just taking requests, Sierra.
Steve, I think you enjoy giving all of Northeast Ohio a heart attack. Because... I cut it down. I need it.
George, I think you just need to talk about your day at this point.
Yeah.
Well, that sums up the way it's going.
Yeah.
But no, I think you enjoy giving Northeast Ohio a heart attack with that thought.
Exactly. I think everyone was already having one. So it either self-corrected with the Denzel Ward play or everybody survived it who's still listening to this, I guess. No condolences to those who didn't. But, yeah, I think everybody was having that, George, don't you? I mean, it felt Nate, I think I had the same feeling that you did, that it was going to be a loss when they recovered that onside kick, because we saw this game, somewhat the same game, in 2013. It was the end of Rob Chudzinski. New England was impossibly down toward the end of the game. And Cleveland, despite a late Tom Brady touchdown, still would have won the game simply by recovering an onside kick. New England recovered that onside kick. You kind of had the feeling when they did that Brady was going to lead the Patriots to a victory, and he did. And kind of had that same feeling today that what a shame. A game that should have been won a long time ago slips away like this. But, it was good that Denzel Ward was buying heart attack relief pills around.
I got to point out, though, that with that game-saving tackle by Denzel, he did the same thing, and he agreed on, like, the first play of the second drive the Ravens had. Stopped the guy for a 2-yard gain. It was a statement, you know, shoulder, you know, statement-making hit. And I think he came to play like that all day today, and there were some other people on defense like Miles and Clowney that did as well. I mean, I thought they really – I mean, I'm with you. I thought they were losing when the ball bounces off the fullback, you know, but I still think the defense, you know, had something today, some will that hopefully will spread to the rest of the team.
Hey, when an onside kick reflects off somebody, it's never good news. It was Fozzie Whitaker in New England. And I still remember that vividly, Steve. They needed Marla's guy, Steven Carlson, who's been on IR all season. He is the onside kick recovering machine.
The leader of the hands team, in my opinion.
Yes. And as far as Denzel Ward goes, this is a guy, as much focus as there is on Baker Mayfield and how this season has not gone the way he wanted it to go as he plays for a contract extension, there is not nearly enough being said about how Denzel Ward has gone out and earned a contract extension. He continued to show today. The Browns also awarded him the Walter Payton Man of the Year. He was presented that. It's just another sign to me what they think about him as a cornerstone of the franchise, and he's lived up to it.
You know, he's six games on. Let's call it the past six, seven games. He's had a stellar season. It makes me wonder how much the neck injury affected him earlier in the season, how much he wasn't letting on about that. Obviously, they won't say. They'll never really let on, but for the past six games, he's been phenomenal. He's been amazing. You could argue that he's been Miles Garrett's equal during that span.
John Dorsey made some fatal mistakes in his 2 years as general manager. Arguably the best pick that he made. Probably now that the season is unfolding and Ward is having a consistent, outstanding play, probably the best value pick that Dorsey made, even though it was way up there at number four overall, was to take Denzel Ward instead of Bradley Chubb.
Why do you use the word value pick?
Because at number four overall, you're expected to be a Pro Bowler, and so it's almost hard to be a value pick when you're picked that high in the draft. So value pick when you're drafted at number four overall is almost in quotations. But at number four overall, let's just say it was the correct pick. How's that?
I'd also say another guy with the last name of Chubb would like to argue about your best John Dorsey.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you could say that. Yeah, Chubb's you probably have me there, Nate. But you could also make a case about, well, what's more important, a shutdown corner,
sure,
or a great running back? And let's just shake hands and say Dorsey made two good ones there.
Yes, I will totally shake your hand on that.
So is this a case of a win is a win is a winner? Do they need to cut this nonsense out without delay at this point? Because, again, that was a half of football. It was the first half of football. And then the offense went back to looking the way the offense has looked the prior seven games. When do they fix this? How do they fix this?
They don't get conservative the way they did. And guys, unless I heard this wrong, I don't think I did. I don't think I remember it wrong. But I thought the hidden comment, maybe the comment of the post game today was Mayfield said we got too conservative. I don't know that he was talking about just the offense there. And he easily could have been talking about the defensive calls, because I've got my play sheet in front of me here. And the Ravens, after Jackson went out, this is second half when Jackson was out, drives of 62 yards, 46 yards, 69 yards, 90 yards. That's ludicrous. And that can only happen, I think, if the defensive calls went into a shell and went into a sit of sit on the lead mindset a little bit. So, George, I think the fix is don't sit on the daggone lead.
I was texting to a friend after the game ended. I'm like, it's almost as if they were just trying to run out the clock in the second half. And I got the impression that that's happened more than once this season when they enjoyed a comfortable lead. Instead of just pouring it on and going for the jugular, they prefer to try to bet a sure thing. That's the best way I can think of putting it. And there's no such thing as a sure thing in life.
Makes me wonder if they were almost in their own heads about, oh, we don't have two of our top tight ends and James Hudson starting his second game. And it's almost like they get in their own way. Like, I was just typing in something about what John Harbaugh said about Huntley, about if he's on our team, we have confidence in him. It's almost like they don't have confidence in it, in some of these backup guys or whatever. I don't quite understand it, but I'm in total agreement about going into a shell in the second half offensively.
I think Mayfield's tone to me said that we didn't have to go into that shell. So whatever their thinking was, you know, that's you can't be paranoid. Here's what bothered me most about today's game. On balance, nothing about beating Baltimore, the first place team in your division, should be bothersome. But in your corrections phase, in your Monday after discussions, you really do have to talk about that conservative stuff. I thought the Browns had a fantastic chance today, the chance of a season to and it would have started on the drive that ended with McLaughlin's missed 40-yard field goal. That was terrible. I mean, Tucker could play finger football and make that that field goal. That was terrible. But they had a chance there to really instill some confidence in Mayfield and the offense and the entire team. So I guess that's kind of sticking to my craw a little bit, that they really lost an opportunity to go forward into the Raiders game with more confidence than they have. But that's fine. They got the win. And if they win on Saturday and look good doing it, it'll seem like one of the better weeks we've seen up here.
I think getting healthy, too, is another key, which is kind of odd to say. They just came off a bye week. But I feel like a large part of the plan of getting right on offense revolved around Kareem Hunt. I mean, we saw Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb on the field together for the first time this season. With some creativity there and Hunt playing receiver as he has before, but they put the tandem out there and, you know, Hunt gets hurt late first quarter and never comes back. In fact, he got hurt making a key third down conversion, you know, to set up that Jarvis Landry 9-yard touchdown catch from Mayfield. So, yeah, I think Hunt and then getting, you know, if they can get David Njoku back from COVID list, that would be another huge difference to just the way they plan and prepare and how they like to use the 13 personnel. Obviously, they had to get creative down tight ends. You know, we saw Blake Hantz being used last week in practice as that sixth offensive lineman practicing a lot of jumbo. Couldn't really report it, but Austin Hooper did say it on Wednesday that Hantz is somebody who could do that for him, and that was something that they used repeatedly. So I think that they made the most of it, you know, with not being able to do what they normally do. But I do think the Hunt injury loomed large. They were optimistic, Stefanski and Baker Mayfield, Nick Chubb, after the game about Hunt being okay. And Stefanski kind of said that, you know, Hunt wanted to come back in, wanted to fight, but they just thought the right thing to do was to keep him out. And Hunt came back on the sideline in the second half. So what's really going to be interesting about it is, hey, they play on a Saturday this coming week, right? Or this week, technically, they play on a Saturday. So, you know, a little bit of a shorter week to get Kareem Hunt back. We'll see.
So the big question, well, it's not the big question. I'm just curious, was Miles playing psychologist Friday? And did the psychology work?
Yes and yes.
You have no doubts about that.
I don't, because I think when Miles speaks, everybody in that organization listens. And to Miles' credit, I mean, when he says things like that, like, he delivers. He's made a lot of great plays in his career. Today, I am calling definitively the best play he's ever made.
Yeah, I got home from the stadium, and all of a sudden I look at the score and they're up 24-6. I'm like, what happened? And I had to go back and find the play. I'm like, oh, so he's really stepping up today. Wow. Nice play.
I agree with you, Nate, about psychology and all, you know, motivation. But I also think he did say today he was motivated by what he saw or didn't see in practice. So he was also, you know, speaking like, I mean, yes, he had a message to deliver, and yes, he was being, you know, all that, but he wasn't happy with what he saw. I mean, it wasn't just like he made it up, you know, and there were deficiencies there that he was unhappy with. And I mean, the 48-hour thing doesn't get much more pointed than that. So,
yeah, can I ask you today after the game, did you head into the interview on Friday knowing you were going to deliver a wake-up call, or did it just happen to come out? And he said what Marla just explained, that it basically was feelings from what he had seen in practice. And the great Marla Ridenour asked a couple questions in that interview, and then it just came out. And I think it did mean something in that locker room.
While you're on this subject of psychology, I thought this was really important, and that is the relationship between Miles Garrett and the fan base here. I think half the fan base, give or take, for a long time, looked at Miles and saw a really good player, one who didn't play all the time. Of course, he got kicked out of that end of the season there, and that's a story for another day, and that's luckily ancient history now. But there's always been a subtext of, well, he was a number one overall pick, but he's not quite playing like a number one overall pick. He's playing like a really good player, but not number one. Today, after that play, After that play, the love, as his image was shown on the big Tennessee scoreboards. Come on, Tennessee. struggling. But when Miles' image was shown on those scoreboards, just the buzz in the crowd and Miles' big grin, knowing he was on camera and at the same time digesting those cheers, I thought that might have been the best stuff that happened today, that relationship between the fans realizing that this guy is really good, and Miles realizing that people want to love him.
Well, we could get into a broader debate about the fans not knowing what the heck they were talking about those early years because they expected a sack every other.
I disagree, George. I thought there was a long stretch when he didn't play like a number one overall. Played really good football, but no, I wanted Superman out of my number one pick. Same with Mayfield. No, truth be told, he's a number one. He's got to play close to that level.
Right out of college.
I'm talking about 2 or 3 years in for Miles. Now, it wasn't just his rookie year, but here again that is a story for another day. I think that's why I close with that bottom line of I thought the symbiosis of Miles looking at the people and the people looking at Miles and everybody feeling the love was kind of the takeaway today, and you can kind of forget about some of the past debates.
That's fine. I'm glad to know that they finally realize what they have. And players don't like Myles Garrett don't come along very often. There's always been the debate of who could take LeBron James's crown in this town when LeBron left. Well, I'd argue that Miles now has a chance, especially in light of what's going on with Baker Mayfield.
Of the Browns, absolutely.
I agree, George. And having gone to a few community events that he's had this year, he's really getting in touch with his relationship with Cleveland and how it's grown. And I just think that he feels like he was supported by a lot of people around here, you know, in a fan base in that 2019 season that ended with suspension when he was, you know, became one of the most controversial figures in all of sports and was vilified. I think he remembers a lot of Browns fans had his back, and I think that the relationship has grown from there. And obviously, Steve, I agree with you. You know, when you're that number one overall pick, the expectations couldn't be any higher. And although he had played really well since the Browns drafted him, number one overall pick expectations are just, you know, in a different stratosphere. I think we're seeing it now. I mean, when I think about Miles and the way his career's gone, the very first play that he stepped on the field, because he had missed the first four games with a high ankle sprain his rookie season. He got a high ankle sprain right before that opener in practice. He steps on the field against the Jets. Very first snap, he gets a sack. You know, and that's just reminded me of that. It was like a storybook moment. Today, he gets his 15th sack of the season. That sets the official single-season franchise record for sacks. On the same play, he scores his first NFL touchdown. So, I mean, these movie-type scenes don't happen with just your average player. You got to be really special. And so I do think that this is a guy living up to that number one status now.
So let's close with this. Right now, his season keeps going the way it is. Is he going to finally get that deep defensive player of the year that he came in? And see, he doesn't talk about it anymore. He came in hunting for that. It was a stated goal. He keeps playing the way he does. Does he finally get it this year?
Watt had a bunch of sacks the other day, didn't he? I mean, in recent times. So he's still in the discussion.
Yeah, it's him and Watt right now, I think.
Well, but you would think that maybe if the Browns win some more, maybe, you know, that would, I don't know, play a little bit of a part in that.
Absolutely.
One thing you could ask is, what would general managers do? It would be interesting to have this conversation if any of us talks to a GM or former GM this week and say, hey, Phil, or whoever, whatever would be the name of a GM you would call and ask an opinion. But, you know, who would you take, Watt or Garrett? You know, I'm taking Garrett just because I kind of like the way he is incrementally improving a skill set that was already there big time. And, you know, today's play was a long illustration of what he's capable of, that we're he's just 5% better in some way or other than Watt is, maybe 7.5%.
As good as Watt is, I've heard people from Pittsburgh criticize him for disappearing against the Browns in the playoffs. in January.
And I might also lean toward Miles just as the freak of nature, the otherworldly thing, physicality of his game, he almost looks like a, I don't know. I'm not judging him just on appearance and body type, but I still feel like there's some more he can do. I mean, he's been talking about making these game-changing plays. I mean, this is, this could be, maybe this will open the floodgates.
I just like to throw out that Kadavian Clowney looked like a former number one overall pick on a play in a very key point of the game today.
He had a generally good game today.
Probably his two best games of the season, the last two.
Yep, he did. And, I got to say that, the Browns showed a lot of resilience today. I mean, the Ravens did. Let's not forget, the Browns had these guys on COVID. The Browns have a lot of banged up guys and a lot of guys are inactive, and they lost Jack Conklin in the game against the Ravens November 28th. But the Ravens are more beat up than anybody, and the Ravens lost Lamar Jackson in this game and Calais Campbell, their six-time Pro Bowl defensive end. I mean, so both teams were. And, I just think that the Browns were the more desperate team today, and at times in the second half it looked like they had forgotten that and might blow it, but they did come through, and I think Miles' play and his leadership were the kind of overriding themes of the day.
All right, guys, let's call it a night. I'm sure you guys have more writing to do. I'm going to get this posted. For Steve Dorshut, right now we're Nate Ulrich. I'm George Thomas, and we'll talk to you. Well, we won't talk to anybody. We'll see you Saturday. Good night.
Good night.